So during the meditation here, it's funny when we're on Zoom, I can't really know, like we don't know what's going on in people's environments. And another hailstorm came up during the Zoom, during the meditation. And I just love, love, love seeing a sort of ordinary occurrence of a hailstorm and remembering that that's impermanent. It was sunny. And then the clouds came, and then suddenly it was hailing, and now there's sun again. And that's the second time this evening. It's just so wonderful to see the teachings of the Buddha unfold, which is impermanence in that case. Anyway, so my talk for you tonight is on which you might have gathered from doing our phrases during the meditation. The talk is on mudita, which is often translated as sympathetic joy, which is very clunky. We could also call it appreciative joy or appreciative delight. So it's about being happy for others and being delighted for others. The general working title for the topic tonight would be joy is an action or joy is a verb, to really point us towards the fact that that it's a quality that we can cultivate. We just did with the phrases. I don't know how it was for you with the difficult person. I've been doing an unnamed political figure. I'm not going to name him. And it's been very interesting to have like to work with the phrases. Anyway, it's an interesting practice and how the phrases can start to train our minds. And we might not during the meditation actually feel like we mean it or anything, but it is worthwhile as a practice to continue. So joy or appreciative delight, mudita, is an action. It's something that we can do. So I do live quite rurally, and in my little neighborhood, we have four properties. So there's four families down here, and one of the neighbors took us to get some horse manure. This is another place to do a little gardening detour. I've always gardened, but I've been very into gardening since I live here. And as soon as you start to garden, you realize that the soil really needs a lot of support because it's offering food and flowers to me, food and beauty. And so I need to offer back the poop. And this is another place where I can see the teachings of interconnectedness and interbeing just in this process. So one of our neighbors introduced us to, we live about 4 miles down a dirt road, but up at the top up by the gate and on the paved road, there's a man that has some horses. And we were introduced to him last fall because he gave us some horse manure. So my husband and I got really excited, and we rented a U-Haul pickup truck because we don't have a truck. And we went and we got two big loads of horse manure. And you can have mudita for me. It's really wonderful for my garden and my flowers. But at any rate, it turns out that this man who lives, he's my neighbor too. He's not that far away. He built the barn that we use as an art barn, as an art studio. So I got to meet the person who built the place where my husband makes art, which is pretty fantastic. And again, it's another place where I can see the interconnectedness of everything. So at any rate, and while we were there, the horses were there, and there's a wire fence, and there's one old horse to be scratching his back end on the wire fence. I think he's gonna knock the fence over. He was so excited about scratching his back end. But at any rate, we were talking to this man who was very generous, giving me the horse manure. And it turns out he said that he had just gotten a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. And you could tell it was really new for him. And he said, I just started taking the medication. I think he said it was just a couple of weeks that he'd had the diagnosis. And he was really open about it. And it wasn't like a big deal. He's just like, oh, I have Parkinson's disease now. And I could feel my heart opening for him in compassion about that. And maybe you have a chronic illness, or maybe you have an acute illness. I gave a version of this talk on Wednesday night at another Sangha, and one of their Sangha members had just gotten diagnosed with leukemia. So maybe you have illness, or maybe someone you know has illness, or maybe you have headaches, or maybe you have recently lost a loved one. This is really the soup. This is what it is to be a human. Yes, we have these challenges. This is the first noble truth that we age and we are ill and we lose people we love. So, and then the collective soup that we're living in right now too is very intense. It's very, it's heart-wrenching, really, the war that's happening. I think heart-wrenching is really the right way to talk about it. Or maybe you've been upset this week about the Roe versus Wade possibility thing that's happening. I know I have a few friends that are telling me that they're perseverating on it and can't get like in a kind of outrage loop, right? That can happen to us sometimes, can be a kind of outrage loop there. And then there's all the racial injustice that we live through, and there's climate change that we're facing. So this is both personally and collectively, there's a lot that we are all holding in our hearts right now. So you might ask yourself, or you might ask me, why or how can we speak on joy in the midst of this? How is that even possible? But in some ways, our very lives depend on our ability to hold the deep paradox of what it is to be human. So Jack Kornfield, which I know many of you, if not every single one of you, have listened to Jack Kornfield talks. He always talks of the 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys, right? Like this is what it is to be human, 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys. So that saying is a Taoist saying that's really pointing to, it's pointing to the reality of what it is to be a human. The full quote, I looked it up because I was so curious, the full quote, it's from, Chuang Tzu. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but anyway, the full quote is, when you open your heart, you get life's 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys. So isn't that interesting that this quality of mudita, and I'm also talking about compassion too when I start to talk about the challenges, is considered to be a heart opening quality. And this quote is telling us when you open your heart, you get life's 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys. So I'm not talking, when I start to talk about joy, I'm not talking about denying the difficulties or pretending they're not there, but I am talking about the fact that we're not limited or defined by the difficulty, by the suffering, by the dukkha. So we're not limited or defined by them. There's a man, Ross Gay. I don't know if some of you know of him. He spent a year, every day for a year, he wrote an essay on delight. So he did a deep study into mudita, really. And a quote from his book. So he got this book published on delight. He says, what if we joined our sorrows? I'm saying, what if that is joy? He's talking about joining our sorrows together, and that can be a kind of connection, a kind of joy. So when we talk about joy, we're not pretending that life is different than it is. It's hard, but it is beautiful also. It's both. Our sorrows connect us together. Our hardships connect us together, and so do delights. So do the delights. So really nothing in its essence is one way or another. Our minds want things to be, are often, maybe not for everybody, but for a lot of people, the mind is like, oh, it's like this. It's completely horrible. We're going to crap, and right. Or it's all really wonderful and we're going to be joyful, but actually it's full. It's like the fullness of the whole thing, the fullness of life. So nothing in its essence is one way or another. We have this teaching from Suzuki Roshi, who is a Japanese man who came and brought Zen Buddhism to the United States in the 60s and 70s, I think. One of his students asked him at some point, this is famous, you probably know this too. One of his students asked him at some point, what is the essence of the Buddhist teaching? And Suzuki Roshi said, not always so. right? So this is our lives. Not always so. We are washed over with waves of dukkha, and we're washed over with waves of delight too. It's both. It's like when I sit in meditation and it's sunny, and then it's hailing, and then it's sunny, and then it's thundering. It's just like that in our lives too. It's one thing and then the next thing and the next thing. Not always so. Because of this, joy will always be inclusive of our sorrows. Because of our joys, we have sorrows, right? Because we have joy, we have sorrow. I take such delight in my garden, and then it falls apart. Or I take delight in my nieces and nephew, and they grow and change, right? Because of our joys, we have sorrows. Because of our sorrows, we have joy. So Ross Gay, again, I was listening to an interview with him. Krista Tippett on Being was interviewing him. And he said in the interview, I stopped it and wrote it out. I thought it was amazing. He says, joy, and he's talking about mudita, joy has nothing to do with ease. Joy has everything to do with the fact that we are all going to die at the same time that something wonderful is happening. So something wonderful is happening, and at the same time we're going to die, or we're going to die, and at the same time something wonderful is happening. So it's true, right? Like, it's true. There's wonderful things all of the time. There's beautiful things all the time, and there's hard things, not always so. And our heart is opening to, or we're practicing, right? So this quality of mudita is a practice, it's an action, it's a verb, it's a thing we can do. It's a practice of opening our heart to all of it, to the joy and the sorrow. So when we see the fragility of our loved ones, we might remember to be delighted that they are here. My mom, they found a mass on her kidney in the fall, and they said, oh, it's probably just a very slow growing something, maybe cancer, maybe not, we don't know. And now 6 months later, it's grown enough that they want to take out her kidney. And I find that I'm wanting to call her more. And she lives on the other side of the country, so I can't go visit her so easily. But I do find myself calling her more, wanting to reach out to her, because I'm aware now suddenly, I don't know why it took me over 50 years to be aware of this, but I am aware that I'm going to lose my mother sometime, hopefully not sooner than later. But when I see the fragility in the people around me, then I remember that we can remember when we see the fragility to be delighted that they are here. So appreciative delight is connective. It's connective. It's another place where we're seeing the interconnected or interrelated nature of reality. So appreciative delight is in some ways pulling us into alignment with that connection, because we want to share. We naturally want to share. So someone gave me a clematis, which is a flowering vine, last summer, and it didn't bloom. I planted it, and I think it was maybe a little worse for the wear for the car ride up from the Bay Area up to my house. So I put it in and I tended it. And this week it bloomed. I hadn't noticed it bloomed. And my husband was outside and he saw, and he like came and found me, and he was so excited. He's like, oh, come and look. The clematis bloomed. And it was like this beautiful kind of pink fuchsia-y color. And it's so ordinary, right? It's just like a little ordinary thing in my day. The flower blooms, Joe saw it, he called me, and we shared it. That was a moment of appreciative joy, of mudita. We were sharing that. So in my little neighborhood, there's, like I said, there's four families. And one of the families, it's a couple, and they are in their 30s. And the woman is quite shy. She'll talk to me if I talk to her, but she's never approached me to start a conversation. She's very, very shy. And she had a baby about a month ago. And so I've been walking by their house because I want to meet the baby. So this is my technique, you know, walking by their house because maybe they'll be outside with the baby. So she's never approached me. I'm walking by the house earlier this week, and the woman comes out of her house to come and tell me that she's so happy that she's wanted to be a mother for so long, and that she's so happy to be a mother, and the baby's name is Bjorn, and they call it Little Bear. And I heard all about the baby, and it's sleeping sometimes 4 or 5, like the whole thing, like a new mom, and she was glowing. And I just thought that was the power of joy too, how it drew this woman out of her house. She's never done that before, and to share. And I do hope that she could feel my happiness for her, because I am quite happy for her and little baby Bjorn and her husband. So the joy is connective. It's an action that we do to connect to each other. So Ross Gay again, he speaks about how to practice with looking for delight or cultivating this quality of joy, that it becomes easier over time. But there's a process. So he did this for a year, every day writing an essay, not just noticing, right? Like writing an essay about it, which I thought was really powerful, to spend some time every day writing about our delight. And he speaks about how it becomes easier over time. And that you start to, over time with practice, develop a kind of radar for delight. And he speaks about how you can get a muscle, like instead of doing like bicep curls, we can do delight curls or something. And that it is a commitment in some ways to let go of our preoccupation with whatever is, you know, our problems generally is what we're preoccupied about, our problems, the problems of the world. So it is in some ways a commitment to let go of those preoccupations and open to the present moment. So again, it's not that the hard things aren't there, and the hard things might be there sometimes. And then that's when compassion is there, right? But then when the delight is there, if we've developed the action, right? It's an action, it's a verb, it's something that we do. It's not like if you don't feel like you're a very joyful person, or you don't have a joyful personality, that you're doomed, right? It's not like that at all. It's also not like there's some like storehouse of joy somewhere else that if you just like tap into it, you'll get it. It's not really like that at all. It's a muscle, it's a cultivation, it's an action, it's something that we do. So we're choosing to show up for ourselves and each other. It's really a choice to show up for ourselves and each other. We see the fragility and hardship and choose to stay. So it's not like our nervous systems, you know, the body isn't wired such that you can only get the good things and not, and feel the good things and not feel the bad things. It's actually like our nervous system doesn't work like that. It's kind of a courageous commitment to opening to the whole shebang, to the whole messiness of all of it. So we see the fragility and the hardship and choose to stay. You know, our meditation teaches us this too. Because meditation is hard. I'm always surprised that meditation and mindfulness is becoming so popular right now, because it seems to me it's a harder practice day than yoga asana. I teach yoga asana too. And it's really, you know, we learn in meditation that we can come back again and again and again, that meditation, the process of coming back into the present moment, is a process of holding ourselves in kindness. So when we sit down to do mindfulness meditation, it's not about being a good meditator. It's not about being a good breather. You've been breathing for some years. I think you're probably pretty good at it, right? Right? But it is about holding ourselves in compassion and showing up. Sometimes our meditation process and practice can be quite pleasant, and other times it can be very, very difficult. And part of what we're doing is letting go of the idea that it should be different or it should be better, and just keep showing up. Just keep showing up here and now, again and again and again. So we allow ourselves to be tender. We practice letting go of defensiveness and become present to what's right in front of us. And we do this through practice as an action, as a practice, as a verb. It's a commitment to showing up with open-heartedness. So Ajahn Suchito, who's a Western man, a monk, and I think he must have been a monk for 40 or 50 years. I love his talks. I found a transcript of one of his talks online recently that was called Good Enough. And he said in this talk, being willing to be present is basic goodwill or metta. It doesn't mean dolloping some sentiment on top. It means that I am willing to be here with this, and this is whatever is happening in the moment. It means that I am willing to be here with this in an open way. That's the bottom line of it. With the painful, the goodwill becomes compassion. With the agreeable, it is called mudita, or enjoyment, appreciative joy. Isn't that interesting? He's talking about being willing to be present as a basic goodwill, a basic loving kindness. So mudita, I think most of you, maybe all of you, know that mudita is part of the four qualities that are considered to be an awake heart. So friendliness, or metta, and then compassion, karuna, or this appreciative joy, mudita, and then the last one is upekkha, equanimity. And just on a tangent, by the way, when I'm with you next week, next month, I'm pretty sure I'll be speaking on equanimity. So Ajahn Suchito, he's saying that to be willing to be present is basic goodwill. And then whatever is in front of us, and then that's what arises. And the mudita might be there. If there's something joyful, a beautiful flower, another hailstorm coming through, or whatever it might be, or if it's something painful, then the compassion is there. So we could ask ourselves, what are we preoccupied with? This? In other words, what's blocking our presence, or what's blocking these four qualities in general? In general, it's really our own preoccupation with both mental and emotional, whatever problems, or preoccupation with their own self or the world's problems. It could be about my own story, my own emotions, my own needs, my own wants. And then the world, when we become preoccupied in this way, becomes very small and dull. It's not that we don't have real problems, but we can practice as this action, as this doing, as this verb, letting go. So I was talking to someone about this on Saturday, and she lives down in Oakland, and she was saying how she was walking in her neighborhood, and some of her neighbors have really beautiful gardens. In her garden right now, they're in the middle of replacing the garden that's been there with water, like a low water, a drought tolerant garden. So her front yard doesn't look very nice. And she was getting really jealous about all the other gardens and wishing that she had a nice garden. And then she realized, right? She realized, oh, wait a second. I can just be happy for these people's gardens, and it's in their front yard, so I can see them. So it's right, like this willingness to let go of our own preoccupation with, I don't have a garden, instead like, oh, I can be happy for these other people. And sometimes it's as easy as that. I mean, sometimes our preoccupations are quite sticky, but sometimes just bringing a little bit of attention, like, oh, wow, I can be really happy. Look at this. Look what's really happening. I'm actually enjoying my neighbor's gardens. That's what's right here in this moment. So to practice joy, we shift from a defensive kind of stance to a commitment to practicing joy. And it's a commitment, as Ajahn Suchito says, to show up with a kind of basic friendliness or metta. So there are some impediments to mudita. And I think you're familiar with these. Comparing mind. Are you familiar with comparing mind? Anybody familiar with comparing mind? I always like to have this. It's a really funny, it's a funny little thing to say Like, don't compare yourself. If you're a banana, don't compare yourself to a Brazil nut. And if you're a Brazil nut, don't compare yourself to an orange, right? Like, we get so caught up in, like, I think I should be like this, or this other person, look what they have that I don't have, this kind of comparing. And really, it's a false equivalency, apples to oranges. We can't really compare apples to oranges because apples and oranges are very, very different. You are very, very different than me and then everyone else. You are the expression of the infinite intelligence of the universe arising due to all of the causes and conditions, your genetics, your family history, your life experience. So how could you actually compare yourself to me? I'm a Brazil nut. You might be an orange, right? Like, we're very, very different from each other, and that's okay. And that's actually beautiful to give ourselves permission to be different. There's a sort of famous saying that I think is really helpful during the age of social media. So don't compare how you feel on the inside to how others look on the outside. Don't compare how you feel on the inside to how others look on the outside. Social media. I feel like when I go on retreat, sometimes I have to remember this too, because I look around and I think, oh, those other people, they must be being really peaceful. Look at them. Look how well they can meditate. What's wrong with me? See, and what is that? That's a preoccupation with my own self, right? And it's a kind of dukkha where I'm holding on to. When we tell ourselves stories like that, we hold on to an identity. But what did Suzuki Roshi say? Not always so. So not always so. We can let go of that and just give ourselves permission to be who we are and practice showing up with metta, with compassion, with joy, with equanimity, whatever is in the moment. So practice showing up in an undefended way. So comparing mind, judging, oh gosh. So I teach a lot of yoga asana, and I used to, not so much anymore, but I used to do a lot of yoga asana. And if I was taking someone's class, and something was painful in the class for my body, I would automatically go into judging either myself, my body, or the yoga teacher, or I would start hating yoga, right? So the judging mind is a defense in that circumstance. The judging mind is a defense against the vulnerability of being in a yoga class and something arising that I don't really like to be happening. And so often that happens for all of us in our life. Something happens, it's a little unpleasant vedana, or it's an unpleasant tone to it. And instead of just noting it or noticing it or being with ourselves with compassion, the mind and the heart becomes defensive, right? And starts to block it. Oh, that yoga teacher, why is she teaching like that? Or whatever it is, like, the mind goes into judging as a kind of defense. So, and this can block our mudita, because we're stuck, we're hardened. And mudita is a kind of connective responsiveness. So, and then when we start to compare ourselves or judge other people, it really impacts how we feel about ourselves and other people. Have you noticed that too? How it can really impact how we feel about ourselves and how we feel. And it's like putting on a pair of glasses with lenses that are tinted, and we start to only see whatever it is that we're judging, and we narrow and we can't see the whole breadth of the amazingness of ourselves. What is that quote, right? The phrases that I gave to you, how wonderful you are in your being. How wonderful you are in your being. So judging and comparing can block demeaning ourselves, demeaning the good fortune of others. It can be a kind of self-defeating strategy. So there's no boundary to mudita. There's no boundary. There's no end. What else blocks it? Envy. Oh, envy. Avarice, which is extreme greed. And then I was reading something online recently that was saying that boredom actually blocks is a block to mudita, which I thought that was interesting because if there's a sense of boredom, there's a kind of unwillingness to maybe look around and see what's right here in front of us. It's an aversive state, really. So all of these things are all rooted in aversion and greed, right? This causes our suffering. And then there are allies that we can practice. We can practice gratitude, practice counting our blessings. Compassion is an ally to mudita. So it complements. I started the talk really pointing us to our difficulties, that it can actually be an ally to mudita. And then delight in our own happiness. So we can gladden our own minds because that helps free us. So I've been teaching and practicing on mudita now for 6 weeks. It's very interesting to see how with the action of mudita, with doing gratitude practice, doing the phrases, looking for the small delights, looking for the teachings, like when the woman came out of her house to talk to me, I'm like, oh, that's mudita right there. She wants to share her joy with me. So over the last 6 weeks, I can really see how that sense of preoccupation, the sense of preoccupation with my own problems starts to loosen. That's really interesting. So that the mudita, our heart that's filled with mudita, our heart that's filled with these qualities is a heart that's open and free. All right, so mudita is in action. I think that's what I have for you. I have some discussion question for us too. I thought it would be really good to hear from you all. I'm very curious what your experience is. How does compassion in your life encourage mudita? Or how does mudita encourage compassion? Or another way to say that is, how does compassion strengthen mudita, or how does mudita strengthen compassion? I'm just very curious for you, what is your experience of the two, or how they're related for you? I'd just like to learn from you all too. I'd like to hear what you might have to say about this. And then of course, if there's any other comments or questions about anything I said, I'm happy to hear that too. I can't see everybody on my screen. No? Oh, maybe it's too hard of a question. Oh, I see a hand, Mary Gold, yes. And then Deborah after that.
Yeah, it's my gold iPad is what that is, yeah. So, half laugh. One of my email tags is Mudita Mom. Mm. Awesome. And I've had a number of experiences, and so I think it's kind of like what you were talking about. If your heart's going to be open, then it's got to be open for whatever comes. And I think that one of the things that we have a proclivity for is we have a proclivity for looking for things that need to be fixed. So it's, you know, the lizard brain wants to look for problems. And if your heart is open, then you're going to have compassion. And it's really, you know, it's come to see that. And so it's almost like a natural thing. And it's very easy sometimes to overlook the little delights. I mean, like the flower blooming, you know, I mean, I think for me, the gratitude practice and mudita are kind of like kin, are very real kin. But mudita has more of a connectivity. There's more of a relationship with other people that even gratitude has. And so it's kind of like, I mean, just going to the park and walking by the park and seeing some kids on the swing, swinging on the swing. And they are so happy. And it's so simple. And you can see that. And I can let my heart be filled with that joy. Real simple. It's not a big deal. And just to be, like you said, you become on the lookout for that instead of just always on the lookout for things that are not going okay. And I think it's really important to have that balance. And because of the proclivity that we have to noticing the sorrow, the dukkha, you really have to start to pay attention in the present moment so that you can see those things. And once you start to do that, then it shows up more and more. And I think, especially in this world today, it's like you can't have your heart open and just be, you know, stabbing it with sorrow and be okay. So you really need to have that as a balance. And for me, I think that's a really important aspect, is they do go hand in hand. So thank you for this talk very much.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And then Deborah, I think you had something to say.
Actually, I was just pointing. I don't know where my brain is. I was pointing at Mary saying silently, "Hold this up." But since you called my name, I'll speak. First of all, I absolutely love the way you interweave the Dharma teachings without getting all esoteric, reading sutras, but bringing it right home to what's happening right there, the hail, the sun, the baby. I just am so delighted by that. So thank you very much for the talk. In terms of your question, I don't know about compassion and mudita connecting with each other for me, but some months ago, I found a little weed in my, I have a patio and I don't have a real garden, but I have a fairly extensive potted plant garden, and I found a little weed in my honeysuckle plant, and I decided to leave it there out of curiosity. And I thought maybe it could be a flaxseed or a chia seed, because I use rinse water from my dishes to water my plants. This little weed has grown into the most delightful, blooming, endlessly blooming. Yes, it's a weedy plant. I don't know what it is, but it is constantly presenting these delicate yellow flowers. And even when I cut them and bring them in and make little bouquets in my kitchen or put them on my altar, it just continues to prolifically produce buds and blooms. It's just so astounding. And so taking delight in those sorts of things, it's just so joyful and heart opening. And then, yes, I get to share that with other people and be happy for them in whatever they're doing. I got a text today from a young friend back east, and she sent me pictures of a tulip walk she went on yesterday, and just seeing her smiling face and all the pictures, all the tulips, all the different, it was just joyful. And I'm so grateful that I can stay home and be delighted and giggling just over these simple acts. And yeah, I also got a picture of children playing on the beach, and that was delightful. So your talk really resonated for me. And again, I love the way you bring the Dharma just right here, right now, in this everyday happenstance. And it does make, as Mary was saying, she just spoke beautifully, I think, about it, having the balance, you know, like turning off the horrifying news on TV or the radio, and having the balance of just take, yes. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking now. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Even in your little story about the weed, there's Dharma in that too. Like, we think sometimes we'll label something, and that label stops us from seeing, right? That anyway, I just think there's Dharma everywhere when we start to look, and it's actually quite delightful, I think, to start finding it. And the abundance of the flower too, like the weed flower, and you keep making bouquets for other people, that's a lot of Dharma right there.
Rick Hansen was talking about that. I was reading something of his just a couple of days ago online, and he talked about what you just said. You know, we see people and we immediately label them. They're tall or short, yeah, or old or young or black or white, but to look into their eyes and not to, yeah, you know. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So I was listening to Sharon Salzberg has a podcast called The Meta Hour, and I'm so sorry, but I can't remember who she was talking to, but this person that she was interviewing said that there's been some research that shows doing the phrase work, the four Brahma Viharas have the phrase work like we did in the meditation, it actually helps reduce implicit bias in us, which I think is really fascinating. And that's again pointing us back to mudita, or any of these four are things that we can cultivate, things that we can practice. And we can do the phrase work and we might feel like, oh, it's not doing anything, the phrases, but it turns out it does. So you can just keep going with it. Keep going with all of the practices. Anybody else have anything to say? I think we have time for one more, and then there's the, yeah, let's see. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Barbara.
Yeah, Barbara.
I do meta lists and meta for specific individuals, and then I do compassion, and I found that once I get them on the list, I can switch back and forth. And it's almost like it's, since I've done compassion for someone, when they have some good fortune, I can really feel more mudita than I would. And if I feel mudita for someone and then they have bad fortune, I have more compassion just because my heart has sort of been primed. And so I find that the phrases all work together. The Brahma Viharas work together. Sometimes I just, you know, go through the list and dole out compassion and, you know, whatever is needed, or mudita, and I find that just, it loosens it up for me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Yeah,